From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of July, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. The folks from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County will be along to take up the cash grain market. We'll check the agricultural weather forecast with Chesapeake Energy out of Chicago, Illinois. And along the way, I'll update the agricultural news for you and talk a bit about small wind turbines and the farm and ranch. And it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day lower. Nearby September contract and the soft red winter wheat down 3¾ cents. The settlement price at $6.88 a bushel. December at $7.29, down two. Next year's July at $7.89, down a four on the afternoon. And the hard red in Kansas City settled 8 cents lower at $8.14. Back in Chicago, from the corn pit nearby September contract, $6.78¾. 11¼ cents lower. December at $6.74½, down 11. March $6.87¼, 11 cents lower. And the May corn at $6.93¾, down 11¼. July contract of next year, $6.99½, down 11½. The December 2012 at $6.20¾, 0.75 cents lower. August soybeans today, $13.65½, down 14¾. September $13.64½, down 16½ cents. November at $13.72, down 16¼. And January futures, $13.82, down 15¾. March beans, $13.85¾, 14½ lower. July at $13.85½, down 13. And the November 2012 contract at $13.32¼, down 12½ cents. August bean meal at $3.55.80, down $7.20. August soybean oil at $56.10. 41 cents lower. August live cattle futures at $110.65 per 100 pounds, up a dime. The October were down 50 cents at $114.90. August feeders at $136.25, down 35 cents. September unchanged at $137.37½. And the August lean hogs at $100.92½ were a dime higher for the day. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures at $99.14 a barrel, down 73 cents. Ethanol at $2.98¾, up 0.4 cents. Natural gas at $4.37½, 2½ cents lower. Heating oil at $3.10 and 0.2 cents. That's diesel fuel, down 2½ cents. And the gold futures for the day, up $10.70 an ounce at $1,600.12. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,612, down just about 70 points for the day. The dollar at 74.06, down 0.14. The CRB index at 345.89. down 2.04 on the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area is a bit better than it was last week. It says this afternoon skies will be sunny, the high near 89 degrees. North winds today at about 8 miles an hour. And then tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 68 degrees, light winds, they'll be variable. And then Tuesday, sunny, a high near 89 again, light and variable winds will remain with us. Tuesday night, mostly clear, a low of 71. The winds will be calm out of the east at about 6 miles an hour. And then on Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, back into the 90s, just the low edge, 92 degrees. South-southeast winds at 6 to 11, they'll gust as high as 20 on Wednesday. Partly cloudy, a low of 76 for the evening. Thursday, mostly sunny, a high near 94. Thursday night, cloudy and a low of 76. A Friday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly sunny, then a high of 90 degrees. That on Friday. And Friday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 74 degrees. Saturday, partly sunny, a high of 88. Saturday night, cloudy, a low of 70 and mostly sunny on Sunday with a high near 90 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour and talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Monday afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, joins us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Rainfall across the Midwest. Futures were down in the overnight trade. They remain that way today. What do traders think about all of the rain?
Well, it's beneficial to the areas that receive some decent rains. There's some areas that did get skipped over a little bit, but when you look at the radar and the totals, there's pretty good coverage, pretty good event. It's going to definitely stabilize the corn in some areas and helpful to the beans. When you have red and yellow, even green on the radar, it's hard to be bullish, especially this time of year. Kind of opposite last week, though, when you look at the big picture, why didn't the market scream to the upside with the hot weather we had? Same point, a lot of the questions were, why don't we limit down with the rain? So I think the trades kind of digest both sides and keeping it in a trading range until we get a little further down the road and see what type of yield and demand numbers we see as we go into August.
There'll be some interesting times as we talk about the marketplace. I suppose that the trade will want to know really just how many corn acres there are out there. USDA should update those numbers sometime in August. They said they would. And then we'll get a better look maybe in October when the FSA numbers are finally put into that marketplace. And yield's going to be interesting and just exactly how producers believe at this point. Their corn acreage has gone through pollination, and that brings us to this afternoon's report. What do you think it'll show?
Well, I think the trade's dialed in to see a 2 to 4% drop in the good to excellent category. We feel it's going to be a little bit more than that. We feel we'll probably be 3 to 5% out of that good to excellent category. Last week, we were 66% as a nation on corn. We feel that could be closer to 61. You know, we go through the state breakdowns and debate those back and forth. But overall, it'd be interesting to see if Iowa stays 80% good to excellent. Bean-wise, a 1% drops what the trade has built in there. We'll probably be 1, maybe 2. Beans still have a lot more time. But when you look at the weather we had last week, it did some irreversible damage in some areas. And it's going to be a significant report this afternoon to see if they acknowledge it. One item I just want to mention here is, you know, acreage and yield's going to move that bottom line, mainly yield. The David Hightower report he put out last Friday addresses corn and beans both. What would happen in beans if you kept yield the same, lowered it 1-2 bushels, to the acre, and on corn, if you had various in yield up to 4 to 6 bushels there, it shows how that bottom line can move significantly on just a few bushels on the downside here being lost to hot weather here, Todd.
What kind of range are we talking about?
For example, on the beans, you take one bushel off and keep demand the same, carryout could drop to 100 million bushels. Just one bushel, and we haven't been that low since 2003 when we're down to 112. You take two bushels off, keep demand the same, then carry us down to 26 million bushels, which that won't happen. So by looking at this diagram here, suggests that maybe beans are in an explosive situation here if we would remain warm and dry through August there. Whereas the corn, if you take corn, you'll take two bushels off. We could take carry out down to 704 million bushels. And if you go match last year's yield, shave 6 bushels off per acre, corn carry out would drop down to 373 million bushel, keeping demand the same. So the yield's going to be real touchy here. I think Goldman Sachs shaved 3 bushels to the acre off on corn. That Landsworth, the satellite imaging company's got their corn yield down to 153.6. They got the bean yield down to 41.3. So we're starting to hear some different ideas on yield here, and once you plug those into that supply-demand balance sheet, it could really move that bottom line a lot.
Is it a time for producers who probably in your mind should be pretty close to caught up, if they're not caught up, to stand aside the marketplace, or do they need to protect themselves?
Well, it depends where you are, because I know it's a standard answer I give all the time, but, you know, guys were 40% sold, and there are some areas where they've been devastated with weather. All of a sudden, they feel they're probably 80, 90% sold. But if you're in a position where you're not sold up to where you want to be, you got to use these weather rallies to get to that point in time. Probably most obvious lesson or market that sort of sank in was the 88 drought. I mean, we ran her sky high, and once July came around that fall, we were back down to the low $2 level. So even though we're probably going to see some weather concerns in through here, as a producer, I think we need to continue to be where we are. The simplest way to hedge your bet, to have a price protection but leave your upside open, is a simple put option. We've done a lot of that here, is putting a floor under. If the thing does take off and go higher, you still can take advantage of the up move, and you're not committing those bushels in case your crop's not there time.
I'm going to turn your attention very quickly to the livestock cattle and feed report. Was out on Friday afternoon. What you make of those numbers? There were some fairly large numbers in that report.
Yeah, the cattle's going to be a tough one here. We see devastation in the southwest, of course. A lot of movement, rearranging where these feeders are going. We're seeing a situation where that was kind of bearish, but overall, when you look at the total numbers, we're still on the light side compared to past history. The market digested that cattle and feed report real well. We traded quite a bit lower early and came back and instantly closed a little higher in some contracts. And we're in a situation where once we get through this summer into next year, we're going to be faced with smaller numbers. The big thing, though, is this export market. We're continuing to see exports climbing through here. Then, two, it seems like about once a week we see news out of China where a lot of investment money is going into that country to build larger hog confinement buildings to help assure they have plenty of meat to use domestically there.
Kurt, thanks so much.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
In today's agricultural news, FarmPolicy.com has shared an interview conducted with North Dakota Senator Kent Conrad concerning the Gang of Six Farm Bill proposal, which includes an $11 billion cut in agriculture spending over the next 10 years. Senator Conrad confirmed the agriculture committees would get to make all the decisions about the budget cuts. He said that's important because the ag committees have the expertise to make the decisions on where the savings could be made while doing the least amount of damage. Conrad notes the proposed cuts to ag in the Gang of Six proposal is about a quarter of what the House proposal includes in terms of their cuts to farm programs, conservation and crop insurance included. Senator Conrad believes the House proposal would cripple agriculture, but he did note that agriculture does understand it must be part of the solution. The senator also confirmed that any required reductions in farm programs would not happen until after the 2012 crop year to let farmers finish out the farm bill terms they were promised in 2008. Well, the National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson says safety nets, like the ones we just discussed, are NFU's top priority, and any farm bill must help protect farmers and ranchers. That is what NFU wants its state organizations to understand. Johnson says cost will be the primary factor when determining what programs are included in the farm bill and which ones are left out. That's why he says it's critical for stakeholders to get together to write a comprehensive piece of legislation that is satisfactory to all parties. Johnson says no one will be able to get everything they want, but if everyone works together, there's a chance of getting what is absolutely necessary. Johnson says a strong safety net is absolutely necessary. We'll stay in Washington, D.C. for one more story on the budgets. Cutting spending and balancing the budget is the only way the U.S. will get its fiscal house in order. That, according to Senator Mike Johanns of Nebraska, former head of the USDA. He says the financial situation is a mess. Johanns voted in favor of the cut, cap, and balance legislation that was effectively killed by a vote of 51-46 to table the motion to proceed to the measure in the Senate. The legislation proposed to cut current spending down to fiscal year 2008 levels, cap future spending to 19.9% of the nation's GDP by 2017, and require a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. Johanns believes the cut, cap, and balance legislation would have ensured a sound future for future generations. He says the seriousness of the budget crisis cannot be overstated. We'll move out of Washington, D.C. now and go south of the border, where the U.S. Grains Council says it has transformed Mexico into a powerful international showcase for the benefits of U.S. DDGs and utilization as it works to grow Mexico into the United States' second largest market for U.S. distillers' dried grains with solubles. The Council's Latin America and Caribbean region office recently escorted a team of Ecuadorian feed millers and nutritionists to see the use of U.S. DDGs in Mexico firsthand. A main focus for the Council during the trip was to educate the Ecuadorian team on proper DDGs inclusion rates in their feed formulations. Ken Schultz of the U.S. Grains Council is a regional director in Latin America and says giving end users the opportunity to see U.S. DDGs at work is incredibly helpful. He says seeing the process in Mexico, another important market, helped the Ecuadorian team visualize using the product themselves. Ecuador has imported DDGs in the past and is currently considering resuming those imports. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's public radio for the farming world. Up next, community and small wind provide big opportunities for the farm and rural communities. I'll have more from the American Wind Energy Association. The following story comes to us courtesy of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting and the American Wind Energy Association. Well, the community wind industry includes small wind, but it's certainly no small business. The market for small wind turbines with a rated capacity of 100 kilowatts or less, grew by 15% in 2009 and added a record 20.3 megawatts of new capacity, reaching 100 megawatts of total installed capacity nationwide. As Dan Jewell, chairman and CEO of Jewell Wind, explains, small and community wind are ways to get farmers, landowners, and community business people involved in the ownership structure of commercial-scale wind projects. Jewell says community-based development of the wind resources in rural America is very important for communities and provides a tremendous economic development opportunity.
Wind energy represents a new cash crop for these farmers, and this is an opportunity for them to leverage a natural resource into long-term economic development. This can be a long-term revenue stream to increase the financial viability of the community that it's in.
Small and community wind projects can range from one turbine on a farm or ranch that offsets electricity use to multiple turbines owned in whole or part by a group of farmers. Larry Flowers, Deputy Director of Small and Community Wind at the American Wind Energy Association, says a variety of ownership structures and operational agreements have emerged, but he says they're all driven by the idea of local ownership.
It's been demonstrated both empirically and has been validated with some of the modeling that when the locals own a piece of the project, there's a greater return financially to that community, because when you start putting the profits into the pockets of the locals, they spend that money locally, and there's a thing called a multiplier effect, and that multiplier effect is enhanced when you have local ownership.
According to AWEA, a more than tenfold increase in installed wind capacity is expected over the next 5 years. 13 million homes in America have enough wind and unobstructed location to install small wind turbines. Flowers says there's an opportunity to learn more this September at the AWEA Small and Community Wind Conference and Exhibition.
One of the main audiences is the agricultural community. It's the rural areas that really generate the electricity and the jobs associated with it. So the ag sector, we want to get there en masse because this is the crop of the 21st century, and we want them to be aware of it.
Flowers says county commissioners, rural electric cooperatives, and municipalities are also encouraged to learn more about the small and community wind opportunities. He says the event is a combination of education, exhibition, and networking, showing consumers, renewable energy professionals, dealers, and installers how best to capitalize on wind technology for homes, farms, and ranches, business and rural electric cooperatives, and play a role in the development of wind power generated and used on site or sold to the local community. The workshop is scheduled for September the 15th through the 17th. For more information and the agenda to register, visit www.smallandcommunitywindexpo.org.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. And Jenny Springer from the Andersons right here in Champaign County is on the phone line to talk about the cash grain market with me. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
Good afternoon, Todd. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Rainfall in our area. As you call around and talk to the folks that are bringing grain in to you, what do they say about the amounts? Are there places that did get and some that did not?
Yeah, I think, you know, in talking to some guys today, I think it was, you know, there was a lot more rain north of 74. I live north of St. Joe, and I had 7/10. Some guys that live around Champaign got somewhere around an inch. A guy from Leroy was in this morning, had 5/10. But then, you know, guys south, I talked to a guy from Seidel that only had 2/10, and a guy from Chrisman that had 2/10. So, you know, they were kind of hoping, they won't turn away any rains, but they were kind of hoping for some more.
They'd like some more, and it doesn't look like they're going to get any rain anytime soon. There's a little bit in the forecast, but it's kind of hit and miss. Are they feeling the pinch, you think, in the field at this point?
Well, the thing is that, you know, our crop still looks really good from the road, and a little bit less in the temperatures is going to help for a few days, but we heat up towards the end of the week, you know, and through the weekend again. So the concern is out there. I think they're still trying to be pretty optimistic because the crop does look so great. I was out to northwest Iowa and back last Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it was kind of the same kind of synopsis with all the growers that we talked to kind of along our way out there is, you know, the crop still looks really great, but we don't know what damage has been done with the heat during the day as well as the heat during the night.
And when you take a look at the basis today, did it follow the market lower?
Basis has softened just a little bit. We've seen the river bids fade just a little bit, you know, as well as kind of the processors. But, you know, I think part of that is it's towards the end of the month and they're bought up through this month and then they'll look to buy, you know, again in August. So we could see another basis pop. But for right now, things have softened just a little bit, both in corn and beans.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, we're 741. Fall new crop corn, 662. Fall or cash beans, 1372. And fall new crop beans, 1342.
Thanks so much, Jenny. Jenny Springer is with the Andersons. She's from right here in Champaign County and joined us on the Closing Market Report. We'll say so long to some of our radio stations. For the rest of you, back in a couple minutes with the Ag Weather Forecast.
It's Cow Appreciation Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1850, the refrigerated ice-making machine was first demonstrated by Dr. John Gorey, who eventually received a patent for the machine on May 6th of 1851. In 1857, Frederick Louis Maytag was born. An American industrialist, Maytag was one of the founders of a farm implement company in Newton, Iowa. They made threshing machines, band cutters, and self-feeder attachments. In 1907, the company began producing the Maytag washing machine to make up for the seasonal nature of the farm equipment business. The first machine, the Parsons Pastime, featured a hand-powered wood tub. In 1868, the first patent for a spring tape measure was issued to Alvin J. Fellows of New Haven, Connecticut. The tape measure was enclosed in a circular case with a spring click lock to hold the tape at any desired point. In 1943, George Washington Carver was honored with a national monument near his childhood home near Diamond Grove, Missouri. Carver was a prolific agricultural researcher, instructor, and chemical investigator. And in 1986, Raymond Lowry died, an American design engineer. He is known as the father of streamlining. Famous examples of his designs include the 1947 Studebaker Starlight Coupe and the Coca-Cola bottle. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Josh Starr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago joins us to talk about the weather forecast. Hi, Josh. How are you today?
Todd, doing well. How about you?
Oh, I'm really quite well where I live here in Champaign County. We had a very nice rainfall where you live in Chicago. You had a real drencher, I think, over the weekend.
We sure did. O'Hare here in Chicago. And this is symptomatic of a lot of the northern tier counties across Illinois. Picked up just tremendous rainfall Friday night into early Saturday morning at O'Hare. We picked up almost 7 inches in 3 hours, broke the all-time daily record in Chicago dating back to 1870. And we went from this just amazing stat. At that point, the third driest July on record, all the way up to the second wettest July on record in 3 hours at Chicago O'Hare. So it's these thunderstorm complexes we're seeing on the top side of the ridge this summer are just prolific rain producers. They're really wrenching out all the moisture in the atmosphere. And where you get rains, you're generally getting good, if not too much rain at once. And then the areas that are still under the influence of the ridge, which still happen to be south of Champaign, in fact, you're still running some pretty good 30-day rainfall deficits across south central Illinois and into Indiana as well. They definitely would like some of that water as the next couple of weeks, particularly for soybeans as we start to think about pod development.
Tell me more about those areas. So south of Champaign, south of I'm assuming south maybe of I-72, that line from Springfield
exactly.
to Champaign. Is that right?
Exactly. It's only about four counties, but it's a spot that just has missed out on all the rain opportunities so far this month. And in that core pocket, you're looking at 10 to 25% of normal rainfall over the past 4 weeks. Normal rainfall is time of year over a 30-day period with 5-6 inches. So they definitely need some rains, and particularly for that small quadrant of in Illinois, at least. The next opportunity for any meaningful rains in that area would be not until the weekend. The ridge of high pressure at this point is shifted down south. It will build later this week across the southern tier of the U.S., and you bring a front across the region late Friday and Saturday. It's going to be rather scattered opportunities at that point, but at least there is some chance in the forecast to get some rains into that dry pocket in south central Illinois as well as over into Indiana.
Okay, and then turn your attention to the southwest where they had been burning up. Do they remain in that very dry, very hot period there?
Well, the ridge never leaves too far from home, and home being Texas, Oklahoma, the epicenter of the drought that continues to be ongoing. So those areas continue to be the ones that pick up most of the heat over the next 10 days, and it's really only that southwestern quadrant where you would see 3 days of above 95 a day, above 75 at night, and you continue to think about yield deterioration. I guess wholesale across the belt, though, including much of Illinois, your mins are going to be still well above normal the next 10 days. There's still a lot of humidity in the atmosphere, and that helps keep your nighttime mins up. So the story continues to be really impressive daytime maxes, but it's the mins that are still more impressive this summer.
And then turn your attention to China. They have a corn crop in the ground and growing like we do.
Sure, and it's spotty. Some areas are doing great. The farther north and west you go in their corn belt, they're doing fine, but southeastern parts of their belt, and then the eastern, far up northeastern part of their belt, they need rain too.
Thank you so much, Josh.
Thanks, Todd.
Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. You have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers.